I have
Current Geek!
Hello everybody, welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and it is the Film Festival month. Or, well, that time of the month anyway. A special look back at the greatest movies of all time from a geeky perspective. I'm Scott Johnson, he's Tom Merritt, and this week we are talking about the 1933 hit movie King Kong.
I feel like I should scream, because that's what most of the characters do through most of the movie.
It's especially Fay Wray's character. A lot of screaming, this movie.
And Darrow was a person who screamed.
Yeah, that was her job, and she did it well. If you're looking for good screaming, the problem with the 1930s is the audio technology wasn't such that you could, you know, get a good nuance out of a scream. Instead, it all just sounds like the same screed.
Apparently, Fay Wray felt the same way when she saw the movie in the first place. She's like, wow, I sure scream a lot.
Yeah. She probably,
that's
though,
a direct quote.
While they were filming, she probably thought, well, they'll cut a lot of this out. I'm just doing, this is all B-roll screen.
Takes,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Oh, wow. They used all my takes.
Yeah. It's all the scream roll, they call it.
Scream roll.
But yeah, it is a thing, man. This 1933 King Kong movie, which I thought I had seen entirely, like the whole movie. I don't think I have now after seeing it. I don't think I ever did. So I feel kind of weird about that, because it seems like a thing you just would see on a Saturday afternoon movie matinee thing or something. You know, obviously this film is way ahead of our time, but I saw a lot of old stuff on Saturdays on TV, and this never came up. I know I've seen the stop motion monkey, seen the stop motion ape sometimes, but never the whole movie. So I don't know.
There were times when I was watching this where I knew intellectually I had seen this on the weekends on Channel 11 in St. Louis.
Sure.
And there were times when I saw a part and I sort of remembered how I felt then about that part, particularly when Kong breaks through the wall, when he busts through the wall. I remember thinking, oh no, he's going to break it. He's so angry. Like, now I'm looking at it like, well, why didn't he break through it before if he could break through it? But back then I was like, he's so angry about losing Andero that he's going to break the wall. Oh no, what are they going to do? Like, I remember being really scared and upset for the villagers and the sailors and everything.
It's pretty intense.
So it was kind of cool to have it bring back some of that for me.
Yeah. And for me, I think I conflate it with the 78 one or whatever year it was.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I remember a scene where it's a big a big mechanical hand to make, you know, that was like the ape's hand, and then her in the hand and then fainting in the hand. But she doesn't really do that in this. There's other fainting.
She just kind of leans back and looks stunned.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure the 76, I don't remember the year, but I'm pretty sure in that one, there is this close-up of the mechanical hand and her fainting in the wrist. And so I went, oh, well, that's not in here. So what am I thinking of? And then I remember a guy in a shaggy beard and mustache and kind of hippie clothes, which obviously isn't happening in the 30s.
Right.
So then I went and looked some images up. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's in the 70s one too. So I am kind of thinking I may have never seen this one. And so I feel it was a bit of a pleasure to finally have consumed it, even though I always knew the influence was there. I knew that it was a big deal, that the stop motion stuff was, you know, ahead of its time and groundbreaking for its time and all that sort of stuff. But I guess I never saw the actual movie. I don't remember any of the lead up, the stuff on the boat, like none of that. Stuff.
Yeah, I don't remember it starting so slow. At least for my modern sensibility now, it starts very slow. I kind of liked the storyline in the city where he's being like, they want me to put a love interest in the picture, so I'm gonna get a love interest. I'm gonna go find in the city and find me a woman. Oh, hey, lady, you're starving. It's the Depression era. It's 1933. Right. Want to come with me for some adventure? Oh, wait, I didn't mean that kind of adventure. It's a film, you see. Like, I just loved all that. I was like, okay, this is kind of fun. It wasn't great cinema.
No,
don't get me wrong.
No,
I we'll get to my feelings about this being on our compiled list here. But it was enjoyable. And then they got on the boat and it just kind of dragged. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're halfway through this movie and we haven't even seen Kong
yet.
I also remember the dinosaurs being way more convincing to me when I was a kid than now, where I'm like, well, that's very clearly a green screen.
Well, I would love to go back in time and see this through 1933 eyes for the first time.
Right,
because this must have been mind blowing, you know?
Like, well, exactly. Like when I was, however I was, because the 70s movie you're talking about was 76. My guess, it was probably around then when I saw it on TV. Mm-hmm. To my mind back then, it was impressive. I didn't see the strings. It still looked pretty good to me.
Yeah. And this was really, there were even moments in this where, as much as I know we're looking at very rudimentary stop motion techniques that would change very quickly over time, Harryhausen would get his hands on it and completely upend it. And then we would work all the way up till modern, where we're doing things now that are, you know, indistinguishable from reality. But I can still see parts of this. Like when he comes through the door, like you were talking about, there are scenes mm-hmm. where he's trying to knock those guys off of logs, where it's really, there's a lot of ingenuity, you know, like it's, you can totally appreciate it. And I could feel something like, oh geez, he is freaky. Maybe not, you know, realistic, but still kind of freaky. And blending foreground characters with this background animation technique, again, just didn't exist. Nobody did this till this. And it was mind-blowing. I mean,
Willis O'Brien is the stop-motion animator. He worked on The Lost World mm-hmm. prior to this. So this wasn't the first big Willis O'Brien stop-motion, but because of his work on that, they put him on Kong, and King Kong was quite a bit more successful at the box office. And so King Kong, I think, you know, I looked it up. It's not generally considered the first monster movie. There were tons of jungle movies with giant creatures in it before. It's not the first stop motion animation hit, but it's certainly like the biggest one. So King Kong 1933 is not the first in almost anything, right, but it is the standard setter. It's the one that did it best in its era. And I think that's why it ends up being put on so many of these greatest movie lists, because it was considered to be not only a box office success, but also a cinematic achievement at the time. In fact, the director, Marion C. Cooper, tried to get this movie nominated for visual effects awards before there were visual effects awards. And the Academy said, no, we're not. What are you talking about? We're not giving an award for making a monkey jump around. There's no category for that. We're not going to add one. Well, eventually they would add one, but that does kind of reset my perspective on just how early this was and how unusual, even if it wasn't the first, how unusual it
was. Yeah, very much so. I don't think it's unfair to compare it in terms of, you know, you just said it really well. It was not first at any of those things, but it became the standard, or sort of like the turning point, the pivot. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are a few times in movie history where that's happened. And here are the three times that jump to mind, and I'm sure there's others. But King Kong reminds me of that. Then I would say Star Wars is 100% that. Mm-hmm. Just huge innovations made in special effects that really helped propel that thing over the top. And then the third I would say is Jurassic Park 1 from 93. And in particular, Jurassic Park 1 responsible for saying, all right, we're not the first to use CGI in our film. We're not the first to try this new technique out, but we have nailed it to a point that we're never going back.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is it for the future. And there were literally movies that year that used stop motion in 93. And I feel like from 93 on, if you just never did again. It just didn't happen.
Oh, I mean, I hesitate to say that because there are great examples of using stop motion now, but now it's become a cinematic choice.
Oh, right.
I'm going to do physical effects. I'm going to use stop motion, but I'm using it in a way that is smoother. And, you know, like it has now become the black and white photography of visual effects.
Very good point.
Use it on purpose.
Sure. Like things like Coraline or the Aardman films or whatever. Those things are meant to be that way and they're appreciated in that way. But you're never going to see somebody say, I'm going to make a realistic movie that involves big lizards and I'm going to use stop motion to do it. They're not going to do it. Like, it's just,
man,
it changed forever.
I'm always wary about saying they're not, because then somebody goes and does it.
It's
but
a fair
I
point.
Know what you mean, right? Like, it's just, it's not something you expect.
Right. And so to me, this movie deserves a place. That is to say, King Kong 33 deserves a place in that list of movies that kind of feel like everything after it was influenced at the very least by it, or the techniques used were iterated upon and became standards for special effects as time went on. And I love that about it, even though I think I never really saw it until now. But yeah, I can still appreciate it from here. And not only that, like, if somebody gave me decent cameras and say, all right, go out and make something like King Kong, but here's your tiny budget, I would have a hard time doing some of the scenes they did. I don't know how they did some of it. Like, there's some shots where I'm pretty sure they put a giant screen of the stop motion behind a bunch of actors, and then they reacted to that screen.
Yeah.
They didn't have green screen technology then, so I know that wasn't being used.
I think it was projection. They did rear projection.
It was all projection,
I
think.
The film up there, which is actually easier than green screen because you can see what's happening.
That's
and
true.
You're like, oh, there's the dinosaur. Oh, he's moving his tail. We better run.
But then there were some cases where the characters had weird white outlines around them, which led me to believe somebody has gone in frame by frame and done some editing. Yep. Like
they did have the ability to do something like that. So they may have done.
I just have all this admiration for that. And even today, like, I would just, when as a kid, all I wanted to do was get some clay and take my dad's video recorder and make a bunch of dumb movies. And
there was no chroma key, but there were ways to do like two strips of film together and then print it as one film.
Right.
But you had to make sure that you had, like you say, you had to have cutouts, I think.
Where do you stand on the modern King Kong? Like, the 2005 King Kong is, you know.
Skull Island, I thought, was pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
I didn't see Skull Island.
But Peter Jackson King Kong was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I watched, that was the, I have that one on HD DVD.
Oh yeah. Cause that was one of the big ones that year. That and Batman Begins.
The first HD DVD I ever watched was Peter Jackson, King Kong.
I remember that now. Yeah.
I doubt I'll ever see it on HD DVD again.
Yep. I have I have Batman Begins in that same format. I don't know where I got it.
But it was fine. I really like Skull Island though. I liked where they were going with that. I thought it was an interesting take. And I remember that watching that 70s one too, and liking it. I've always liked King Kong.
Yeah.
Now, where we've been going with this is that I didn't. This is the first time I will say of any of our current Geek Film Fest, I didn't like this movie.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And that's not to say I didn't enjoy watching it.
Right.
Because I enjoyed watching it for all the reasons we've talked about so far. Because it's thrilling and it's, you know, it's fun to see the state of the art of 1933. But the story is not good.
No, the story's bad.
It's crap and it's offensive.
Yeah.
you know, I won't even get into the entire problematic situation of the setup of the plot.
Yeah.
Some people have accused the screenplay. They've accused Marion C. Cooper. Ernest B. Ernest B. Schoedsack directed the film, but he didn't direct all of it.
Right.
Marion C. Cooper, who was making the film for RKO, directed some of it. You also have a screenplay that was started by James Creelman and then finished by Ruth Rose, and a couple other people jumped in and didn't get credit on it. But I'm talking about Marion C. Cooper when I say this. He denied that this was in any way a metaphor for race relations. There was an accusation that this was meant to be a warning sign against interracial dating.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And okay. You could say it's not, and I could see where it might not be. In fact, this movie was banned in Nazi Germany.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But there are plenty of other problematic depictions of the natives.
Oh yeah.
In this.
Yeah. And it's the one thing every time they do a remake
and the Chinese guy in the boat.
Yeah. The Chinese guy in the boat is very problematic.
Incredibly dismissive sexism. I said, I liked the idea that he's like, well, they tell me I got to put a broad in a picture, so I'm going to have a love interest, because that's actually based on Marion C. Cooper. That's Marion C. Cooper felt that way. He had made jungle films and they told him like, if you had a love interest, they'd do better. And so he just wrote himself in. And I love that. I love that authenticity. And I think that's why that part plays.
Yeah.
But then the rest of the time, they just treat Faye Ray's character, Andero, like an agentless doll.
Yeah. And the men.
You could say, yeah, but it was a different time. Man, we watched it happen one night.
Yeah.
Same era.
Yeah.
Great story.
Agreed.
Problematic bits here and there, but treats people like humans, has depth. Mm-hmm. And where it's problematic, I felt like it was reflective of the problems of the time.
Right.
Whereas King Kong is not reflective of the problems of the time. It's paper thin.
Yeah. It couldn't be thinner. And I 100% agree with you. It's funny though, every time there's a new one or a remake or a continuation, they're very careful about when we get to the island bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Peter Jackson's case, they're even like white people looking. Like it's not, they try real hard not to have any of the sort of tropes of
each time they try a little harder.
I think they ought to just not like Skull Island. I haven't seen it, but my understanding of the plot is they kind of just avoid a lot of that because they just skip it. They just don't, you know.
They do have natives, but the natives are have agency over their island,
right,
and warn them, you know, basically really shouldn't be here.
And they're not one note, you know, stereotypes, which is the key here. The thing here though is very much like, I don't know. So I do remember this growing up. I remember people saying, well, you know, King Kong, that was really about, you know, what if a black guy stole the white women? And,
right.
And that whole, you know, subtext. And I remember hearing that thinking, whatever, it's just a giant ape. But given all the other bits of subtext around this movie, some of the other side stuff, especially the sexism, which really bugged me, this idea, you know, everyone's like, women are no good out here. They're just trouble. See, just that whole era of simplification of man-woman relationships really drove me up a wall. And the racial stuff as well. I wonder why it is, given all of that, there's something about King Kong as a legend, though, that lives on well above that. Like, it surpasses all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's interesting. That's the
interesting part is, like, this idea of a giant, monstrous ape. And he's not even actually that big here. Like, he keeps getting bigger in every movie they make.
Yeah.
But the idea of this giant monstrous ape, you know, that could have evolved on an island away from humanity's influence, you know, the land the time forgot. There's something eternal about that. There's something fascinating about, like, what lies in the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it may even be more fascinating now that there is less of the planet that's unknown.
Right. Right. So, I agree. So
there's something to the idea that, like, ooh, but what if there's still mystery out there that makes the idea, it's not the story of King Kong, because the story keeps changing. The only elements of the story that stay in all the versions of King Kong, as far as I can tell, is go to an island that's been isolated, ignore the native population's warnings, try to get something out of King Kong and regret it. You're that's right. That's the story.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's basically, you're right. But also, I think what works and what continues to work, and you see it in other movies, like, I'll use the Iron Giant as an example. I mean, the Iron Giant is basically one of these with some nuances, but it's this idea of a giant, unheard of, alien thing that you just can't believe exists. And then it finds a way to have its savage nature is diminished a little bit because it finds beauty somewhere and now wants to protect and keep that beauty. But then the beauty isn't going to hang around because the beauty doesn't want to die. And then things go berserk. And in the end, you're meant to have some sadness for this creature. You're meant to go, oh, man, after all of that. I mean, the lesson here was like, it was beauty that killed the beast. But in my mind, it was always, you took a wild thing out of the place it was wild in and you tried to keep it and cage it, and you can't do it.
Those conclusions that you can also draw, even though I don't think Cooper was trying to draw them,
right,
are what makes Kong enduring. And also, you know, I hadn't actually thought about this. It's why nobody gets upset when you remake King Kong.
Right.
I mean, I think that's very telling.
Yeah, I do.
You try to remake Citizen Kane, people will scream to high heaven, and arguably rightly so.
Right.
King Kong, though, it's like, oh, yeah, remake it till the cows come home. License it out to Toho. Have King Kong take on Godzilla. Yeah, whatever. It's all good. More King Kong. Bring it on.
Yeah,
it's great.
Nobody cares if you keep doing more King Kong. That's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it that way. But yeah,
I hadn't either.
It's not sacred. It doesn't feel like sacred ground, but the concepts are... have legs. It's just, I don't know. That's weird. It's like clay you just keep making stuff out of. It's very weird. Mm-hmm. It's a,
yeah,
it's,
there's something to the idea of King Kong that you can, you've got enough room to mold. And maybe that's part of the blessing of why this story is so paper thin as to almost be irrelevant to the movie it's in, is that it doesn't set a precedent where you say, well, don't touch that story. It's so well told. Because it's not. It's clunky.
It is pretty clunky.
Don't get me wrong. I understand the place of this film in history. It's just, this is the first one of, what, 27 films that we've watched now?
Yeah.
Where I have looked at it and said, yeah, no, this is only on the list for historical reasons.
Right.
It doesn't have a part that really holds up for me over the years.
I agree. And if it hadn't have been for the concept of giant ape in a jungle, bring it home, it runs rampant, gets on the building and falls off eventually. Like, all of that stuff is legendary. If it hadn't been for that, I don't know why my watch thinks I'm talking to it. If it hadn't been for that, and its time and place and when it was made and how innovative the effects were and all of that, 100% agree. Doesn't go, it's a B movie at best. Like, it's just another crappy.
That's an interesting way to think about it. If this comes out in 1955.
Oh, it's just cheap, crappy B movie.
It's just a B movie.
Yeah. Yeah, totally it is.
But here's the thing, and this is why, you know, I want to pull back from trash in the movie. If there is no King Kong in 1933, you don't get the B movies in 1950s.
Exactly. I mean, there had to have been a through line, and I think King Kong is the through line. And so I think it deserves, you know, credit for that, even though it's so, so putting it on this list, it's interesting because you think of these lists of like these highfalutin, like, oh yes, well, this is where the critics really agree. The movie was a performances and whatever, but this is a way to look at one of the films and out of these 200 movies or whatever and say, this is here for these specific three or four reasons, and that's significant, and it's significant enough to give it a place, especially on our show. But it's, you know, there's no way I'm going to say this has the plot points that put it up there with Schindler's List or Saving Private Ryan or
anything else like that.
Like, or even, you know, some of the stuff we've done from the same era. It just doesn't hold. It doesn't hold a candle to that
this,
sort of
this
thing.
This is definitely the movie that is on the greatest film lists because of its effect more than anything else.
Yeah.
The effect of the image of Kong on the Empire State Building batting away biplanes is iconic. I mean, it is burned into our culture. People who've never seen King Kong know that image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it had an effect on stop motion animation and visual effects. It had an effect on creating a monster movie genre that was just sort of bubbling under at that time and just popularizing it. You know, like you say, it's spawned so many remakes and spinoffs. It even, like, 9 months after it launched, they put out Son of Kong. They went right to a sequel with this. So you can't argue that it doesn't have a place on these lists because of its effect and because of its achievement at the time.
For me, it's like Night of the Living Dead in a way. You watch that now, and we may end up watching that. I'll bet it's on the list. That thing is not, you know, from the perspective of, you know, good story and pacing and character development and acting, it's kind of bad, like pretty bad. But it latches into this like cultural moment, this zeitgeisty thing.
Yeah.
Puts the zombie on the face of it and changes that forever and creates one of the most enduring subgenres of all time. Well, why? I would argue it's like in the same boat as King Kong. It doesn't.
You know what? Mm. I got to figure out how I want to phrase this to get the least hate. It's a little like Superman.
Oh, this is, I know where you're going.
Superman issue one, Action Comics one, is not that great.
No, it's not.
You know, with modern eyes, you go back and you look at it and like, it's just kind of cheesy and he can't even fly.
Right.
He doesn't work at the Daily Planet. He works at the Daily Star. And like, if you look at it as an issue of a comic, it's not that good.
Right.
But the reason it's a Action Comics one, the most valuable comic of, you know, in the world at many times in history, is because it set up Superman. It created Superman. Mm-hmm. And so even if the story itself is a little shaky, you get Superman out of it. And Superman is one of the greatest comic book heroes of all time.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a parallel here, which is like, yeah, King Kong the movie on its own compared to what we have now. Okay, not that great in comparison, but it created King Kong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's deserving enough. Like, I don't particularly like the first Mad Max movie, but man, am I glad it got made.
Well, this was an interesting thing that I didn't realize until I found this in the Wikipedia article.
Yeah.
They came up with the idea of King Kong and then decided they wanted to say it was based on a novel.
Oh.
So this is an early example of a novelization, except they were going to try to pass it off. So they hired best-selling British mystery adventure writer Edgar Wallace to write the screenplay and a novel based on Cooper's fantasy about a giant gorilla. So Cooper had always been fascinated with animals and stuff. And so this is really interesting. He was fascinated with gorillas in boyhood. Then he read Douglas Burden's The Dragon Lizards of Komodo, and he imagined gorillas battling Komodo dragons as a movie. So he kind of predated Kong versus Godzilla in his head.
Weird.
And then he narrowed it to a lizard battling gorilla, and that's what we end up getting in King Kong, is Kong battling the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So he took the concept to Paramount Studios, got some buy-off from RKO, and then was like, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll have Edgar Wallace write a book, and we'll say, based on the best-selling author Edgar Wallace's book. And so that's what they were going to do. They were going to put out this based on a novel by Edgar Wallace called The Beast. Edgar Wallace sadly died before he had completed the screenplay.
Man, that's weird. Create a fake based on a novel to what end?
Yeah.
Were they just trying to impress?
It was just a marketing ploy. They were going to put, I mean, this is, you know, books are still huge. So they were going to put it out in bookstores, The Beast by best-selling author Edgar Wallace. I mean, people know who he was back then.
Yeah.
And then they could say, and now see the movie.
Yeah. Speaking of giant lizards or dinosaurs, and just coming forward to the Peter Jackson remake for a second, the big complaint I had about that movie is they didn't include any of that. It was just the ape. They ran into no other prehistoric or unusually large creatures, and that's dumb. Like I did like that in this, to see this again and go, oh yeah, that's right, they had all this stuff.
Yeah, I remember just being fascinated by the dinosaurs, more so than Kong.
Right.
The idea that, like, oh right, there could be an island where they survived. I mean, it doesn't make any sense now that I'm older, right?
Right.
To be like, well, how would they have survived the meteor impact and nobody else did? And why would it be all those character, you know, all those dinosaurs and not others? Also, I'm distracting myself here, but it's totally unrealistic that every animal just on this small island wants to kill every other animal.
Oh yeah,
because pretty soon they'll all be dead.
Yeah, you can't all be predators, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be.
And the brontosaurus that's like, I'm a killer brontosaurus. It feels hilarious now, but
yeah. Well, I did. And also, somebody said, hey, what are these creatures? And he goes, they appear to be in the dinosaur family. Like, don't want to get much more specific than that, do you? Just dinosaur family? No.
Yeah, you know, well, and probably the audiences of the day knew what a dinosaur was, but that was it. You start saying Triceratops and you don't have all those kids books out there that we have now that teach everybody what all the different dinosaurs are.
It is hard. It's hard to see it through eyes that aren't these modern ones who know better. But I wonder if in 50, 60 years, somebody will look at Jurassic Park and say, wow, I can see why that thing made such a splash and just changed action movies and special effects forever. But boy, that plot was super thin.
Yeah, maybe.
Because right. it's really not that complicated of a plot. I don't know what the standard should be anyway, but you could argue the acting's better, but it better be in 92, and who knows what acting looks like in 60 years or if even people are doing it anymore. But that would be an interesting thought experiment, is to be whoever you and I are in 60 years from now, sitting around talking about Jurassic Park and the way we're talking about King Kong. I would listen
to that. How is this on the greatest films of all time? It's no King Kong.
I mean, I of all the movies we've seen so far on this list, it is the one that feels like the crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
The action for action's sake. It's not meant to.
Especially when Kong just kills everything. Everything attacks Kong and Kong kills it. I'm like, this is definitely like just play into the crowd. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, look at all this.
Yeah, and one after the other, like they just kept coming in. And
yeah.
And I don't mind that on as an idea. It's like mini bosses and then a final boss kind of idea. But I guess
if I were to kind of headcanon it, Ann Darrow is a. That's not horrible, but you know, she's a different flavor of human meat than they've ever had, and humans don't usually go on that side of the right. of the wall, so mm-hmm. they're like, "Ooh, tasty morsel."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's fight over it.
Yeah, I think you're.
Maybe they don't always attack each other. It's all because of Ann Darrow, and that, which would be why they sacrifice a person to Kong, because he's like. That's what keeps him big and strong is having a human meal once a year.
And he's the king.
Yeah.
Of all the other animals, they're subservient to him. And by feeding him that once a year or whatever, a person, it's their way of keeping the tribe safe. I mean,
although why Kong decides he's not going to eat Anne because she's so beautiful, you lose me there.
It is a little bit weird, yeah. And they get more nuance with that in the future ones. But then it's like, well, wait, is that ape falling in love? There was, in this one, I was sure that she had more sympathy toward the ape in this. But not
no,
at all.
That's later on.
That's
right.
A later
she has
thing.
No sympathy to the ape.
None. She doesn't have any of that. She doesn't
She's afraid of him.
Yeah. But in the newer stuff, 70s and forward, it was always more like, well, at first you're terrified, you're fainting, you're scared, mm-hmm. but then you're starting to see, oh, well, he's not hurting me and he's got feelings too. No, don't kill him. You know,
well, right. Because it goes from being a potentially troublesome social allegory or having no meaning at all to a pet allegory, a cruelty to animals tale.
Right.
To say like, oh, but look, she treats him with kindness and he treats her with kindness back. And I mean, if I was Kong mm-hmm. and Ann Darrow was just screaming like that all the time, I'd probably eat her. Because he eats like three other people.
Yeah.
He's just like, you know, even in New York, he just picks up somebody and pops them in his mouth for no reason.
Well, there is a scene in New York where there's a lady, I don't know why she was sleeping during all of that, but anyway, somehow she slept in a New York apartment with paper thin walls while
deep
King
sleeper.
Kong, yeah. When he goes through the window and grabs her thinking he's, like that feels like an important plot point because he thinks, well, okay, it's the female I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And he knows the difference somehow. And he reaches in there and pulls her out and looks at her real close and realizes, oh, this isn't Ann Darrow. So yeah. I'm just going to drop her. I think that was supposed to be the movie saying he likes her in particular, like something about her has made, has changed him or something. And now it's just everybody thinks he's a savage and let's just kill him. And I think that's what they were trying to do, but maybe that's because all the subsequent films that have come since really hammer that home. And so they're the ones that made that part of the story.
The one saving grace of the 1933 version is it's wide open plot holes leave a lot of room to fill in with things that make sense.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. It really is a template. It feels like just a paper template.
Yeah.
And it says, all right, giant creature, got it. People are scared. Got it. Sometimes people are dumb. Got it. All right, go. And
I'm highly cognizant that King Kong was not the worst example of this from that era. Storytelling in cinema at that time, there were hundreds of other movies that are worse in the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because this is highly regarded. It's on many of the list of the greatest movie of all times that I have to be honest about. This one's not on there for the story because I feel like with others, I'm constantly saying like, yeah, even though it's old, you know, I think the story can be justified. And this one, it's just thin.
There's no nuance. It's just paint from A to B and B to C. And
it's not just because it's old.
Right.
But that again, going back to what we said earlier, it does deserve its place for the achievements that it made at the time and all that.
Yeah, it changed cinema for one direction or the other.
Or its effect
on
cinema.
And even if that effect was just generations of people making movies continually had King Kong in their head, if that's the effect, then that's the effect. You know, or if it was really on the audiences and whatever. I mean, the reason I feel like Star Wars deserves its place in the most influential films of all time is because we're seeing it. We're seeing people who are now in their 40s and 50s who were kids for Star Wars who that was the day they said, I'm making movies and they're going to be like this.
And then
they go on to be these amazing directors we have now making films that blow our minds, including some of them making Star Wars movies again.
Right. Right.
And reliving their childhood dream of working on the film that changed everything for them. I mean, how do you get more influential than that? Even if Star Wars is a story, which I like, but you know, it's kind of a space opera and a little thin. If it was the worst story ever, you'd still have to give it credit for the impact, for the influence. And
it's a little like the Model T.
Yeah.
Not the first car ever made, not the best car ever made. Yeah. You could only get it in black.
Right.
You had to crank it.
Right.
But without the Model T, you don't have the popularization of the automobile until somebody else comes up with a similar idea, right? Yeah. Model T kicked it all off.
Interstate highway systems. You don't have car culture in general. It is like the little needle point that everything finally started to flow through. The turning point, the tipping point to
the conging point.
What are the in that famous Malcolm Gladwell book, The Conging Point. but yeah, it deserves a place on our list, I think. It's a movie that I would say to people, hey, if you haven't seen it, you might want to check this one out.
This is one where I will give caveats, though, and say, watch it with a historical mind. Don't expect to just relax and enjoy a good movie.
Yeah, and you will laugh.
Yeah,
at some
and
of
there
the
are parts
dumb
of it
parts.
I definitely sat back and enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. It's not a pain. I don't want to overdo the criticism.
I laughed at everybody who died on the log. Is that bad? Does that make me a bad person? Ah,
you're a cruel, cruel person.
They just look so stupid, those dummies flying through the air and landing down there.
They shook them off a log like it was nothing.
Yeah. I'm also pretty sure I didn't stop and screen cap it or anything, everybody, okay? I wasn't that interested. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure that we have an exposed breast in this film. And that's fine.
It was pre-code.
Yeah, it was. It would have been. But when he was fishing her out of the water, I'm pretty sure a little slip happened. And I just thought, oh, okay, well, hey, that's a whole website now.
1933
slippage. But yeah, like I again, it's not the kind of, I agree with you. It has caveats. I would say to people, oh yeah, it should be seen just so you can see special effects the way they used to be, but also that was a huge deal at the time. And then,
yeah, it's a history lesson.
Yeah, it's a history lesson, yes. Because this is the kind of movie, I'm sure they show this movie in some films classes and things like that, probably.
I imagine they do.
They get around to like action films and adventure films and things like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let us know what you think of the 1933 film Kong. We had to rent it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
Not on the streaming services.
No.
But you can stream it. You just have to rent it to stream it.
Correct. So it's out there, but you got to get it. That's going to do it for this. Hey, now next month we're going to do another film I've never seen. 1948's The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Gold!
Yeah. So tell me about, give me the rough on this. What am I looking at
I've
here?
I've never seen this one either.
Oh,
so this
good.
This will be fun.
Okay.
It's got Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, your favorite.
It's a Western.
Okay.
But it's not a cowboy shoot 'em up Western. It's a hunt for gold.
Oh,
The Hunt for Curly's Gold probably is a comic allusion to the treasure of the Sierra Madre.
All right.
So I have a feeling what we're going to get is a lot of the basis for, oh, that's where that trope came from.
I like Western tropes. I'm all in for this history lesson. So this sounds great to me. I didn't realize that. I thought this was like an Indiana Jones kind of like set in the Middle East somewhere.
You're not wrong. It's also an Indiana Jonesy kind of situation, but it's out in the desert instead of, I guess Indiana Jones is out in the desert too, but
different
it's,
desert.
It's in the Sierra Madre.
Right. The Old West.
Yeah.
As opposed to Egypt or something.
Right.
Yeah. I'm in on that. I want to see it. And so I hope people at home will as well. You can purchase or rent this one. Also not streaming anywhere, at least currently, but it might by next month. Who knows? But that will be our December film for our thing. Now, here's the deal. With Thanksgiving next week, normally we put the show out on a Thursday. we might very well flip to Tuesday next week just to get one out.
So don't complain if it shows up early.
Yeah, if you get a show early, no complaining, okay? Don't look that gift horse in the mouth. Wait, don't look it in the mouth? Yeah, that's what it is.
Don't gift that look horse in the mouth.
There it is. That's the old phrase. All the kids are saying it. So make sure you check that out because we'll be a little early next time as we approach the Thanksgiving holiday. Real quick, do you have a favorite holiday, or sorry, favorite Thanksgiving movie that isn't Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Do you have one?
No. I don't really have a Thanksgiving movie. That's interesting.
I have one.
Thanksgiving for us was going to the grandparents, mm-hmm. watching the football games.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, we didn't really have an evening tradition because Thanksgiving dinner was usually during the day.
We did that too.
We just kind of kicked around, watched whatever was on TV.
We did that early afternoon dinner thing too, growing up. And I always thought we were weird. It's nice to hear somebody else.
No, we always, it was like a late lunch kind of thing.
Yeah. Same with this year. We're doing the same thing. It's weird. But anyway, obviously, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is pretty much everyone's answer because it is kind of the best and maybe only true Christmas or true Thanksgiving movie. But I'm just going to put out there The Family Stone. If you're ever bored and you're like, man, that about? Right. It's a fine Thanksgiving film with a bunch of great actors in it. So go check
that
out.
The Macy's Parade. Thanksgiving Day morning.
Oh, I hate parades, but I don't mind the kind on TV. I don't like live ones. Like where I'm out in the middle of them. Ugh. Blech.
See, the problem with parades is they need to be like small town homecoming parades where they throw candy at you.
Okay, now we're on to something. Problem solved.
Loved parades growing up because they threw candy.
There you go. We used to have a thing called, I forgot what they were called, but the last place I lived, we had Pony Express Days, they call it, because we lived on a path of the Pony Express.
Okay.
That would pass by there, and so they did a big parade, and part of the parade was everybody hucking candy and treats and shirts and hats at you. So
totally, yeah.
I did like that. That was cool. Except one lady got hit in the eye once, and they threatened not to do it anymore. But only takes one, Tom. Only one.
Got to be careful.
Anyway, before we go, a quick moment to note that we are supported by you fine folks at home. We do it over at patreon.com/currentgeek. If you like this show, head on over there and check it out. There's a level for you, I guarantee it. And if you're already there doing that support, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for doing that. If you haven't, please consider it. That'd be wonderful. Tom Merritt, anything you want to mention before we go today?
I would like to tell people that I really enjoy doing Daily Tech News Show, and I'm really thankful for all the people who support it on Patreon so that I can keep doing it. And if you are interested in what we have to offer to thank you for that support and you're not supporting us, go check out patreon.com/DTNS. We have special episodes like an editor's desk where I just talk to people about how I do the show and what my opinions are about it every week. And we have mugs and posters and all kinds of cool stuff. So check out Daily Tech News Show. You'll even get like an afternoon show, the perfect complement to the morning stream in Good Day Internet. That's at patreon.com/DTNS.
I agree with all of that. By the way, do you guys still have those cool knit hats? Because I love mine.
Yeah, those are in the store. Yeah. Definitely.
DTNS knit hat is on fleek. They don't say that anymore, but I'll just sound old and say it.
Yeah,
anyway,
you can be retro. Can bring
totally
it back.
Retro. Hipster in the backwards sense. Anyway, I don't know what that means. We're done, though. Thank you all for being here. Very much for being here. Currentgeek.com is our website if you're looking for more stuff. You can also submit stories at our Reddit, which is at currentgeek.reddit page or reddit.com. I don't know why I said page. And currentgeek@gmail.com if you'd like to email us. We'd love to read it on the show. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.